All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Welcome to American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. So, I just came back recently from an archaeological dig with Mondo Gonzalez of Prophecy Watchers. Now, this is a funded expedition. It is being funded currently by L.A. Marzulli. And we are in search of something that some of you may be familiar with, some of you may not be. We're in search for the remains of giant skeletons. Now, we have a lead going off of witness testimony of the possibility of the area that we were at, which was a cliff face that's on top of a man-made lake. And inside of this very innocuous little cave that's about 3.5 feet wide by 4.5 feet tall is a potential tomb for a giant. So we go to investigate. Now, this is probably the first actual archaeological dig I've ever been a part of. As a kid, I was fascinated with Jurassic Park, so I wanted to be a paleontologist. Wanted to be Indiana Jones, be an archaeologist. And I just wanted to get out in the field and, you know, go have fun playing in the jungle and getting shot up by Nazis. That's well and good. But you know the part that they never talk to you about is how backbreaking digging through sediment in an area that you are almost the same size as the cave. As I was on top of this, what started off as the floor, it's littered with rocks, bigger than your fists, jagged, some flat slate-like rots everywhere, very thick clay, spiders everywhere, cave crickets. And we have very minimal amount of tools because you can't fit a lot of tools in this area. So we're using trowels, gardening tools. After about the first 4 hours, we ended up having to stop because we broke the only shovel that we had. Now it was an E-tool type of shovel. And I snapped that sucker off on a fairly decent-sized rock. And we stopped and, you know, we had already by that point in time removed at least more than 100 5-gallon buckets full of debris, rock, sediment, clay. And we were dog-tired and frustrated because it just felt like it took an hour to go 2 inches down. And as the area that we were in, as we're looking in it, the cave's about 30 feet, somewhat 30 feet deep. And we're right there where the cave narrows down and there is a hole filled full of debris, like blocking rocks were put there. Filled full of debris. But you're getting this blast of cold air, which means there's a cave. So we're in the entrance of what leads to a cave. But from where we're sitting, looking at this small opening where this blast of wind is hitting us in the face, very relieving. It was 95 to 100 degrees all damn day. We realized that we could see the back part of the cave, which was very disheartening because we're like, oh, man. We've dug for 4 hours, and we can see the back part of the cave. Then that means the digging stops. And that's when Mondo brought up a very, very good point, is that the Great Pyramids in Giza, Egypt, they had chambers that ran at about a 45-degree angle. So you had to dig to the chamber. And then you got to another entrance. And then you would get to like the king's chamber, right? And then you would get to the Grand Gallery, which was another chamber that was more or less a stairway that led down probably another 50, 60 feet at a 45-degree angle. And so we sat there and we looked and we said, you know what? If air is hitting us in the face, then whatever is blocking this is from the overflow of water that hit this man-made lake, hit this cave entrance, filled it with 3 feet top worth of debris and rock, and that's probably what's filled this hole up. So as we're looking at it, you know, at the end of the day, we were like, okay, we dug 2 feet down. We were able to sit down finally, like you would sit in a chair. And we had just enough room at that point in time to take a short-handled shovel that we had to stop and go into town and get. We had to go to a Tree Valley and pick up another chisel that we ended up breaking as well. And two more shovels. And we were finally able to get a little bit of relief because it was just so hard on your back and your wrist and your neck, your hips. So now we're able to be in a sitting position. We can dig down with that shovel, and then we hit the floor. I was actually the first one that found the floor, and I was so excited. I was like, Mondo, I found the floor. And we were super stoked because we were hoping that it would slant downward, but it didn't. It continued to move backwards. And so we're like, huh, well, that's weird. If this was a tomb, a chamber, then the floor should start to go at a decline, but it never did. And that's when, Mondo remembered about the pyramids. We could be sitting right at the entrance where the remainder of the debris is, about 12 cubic feet worth of dirt, debris, that needs to be removed. That might be the grand entrance. Because I'm telling you guys, there was cold wind hitting you in the face. And it was just blasts of wind. And we knew that we were getting positive and negative air pressure. It wasn't the recirculation of wind coming from the outside of the cove and then hitting the inside of the cave and then coming back out. There was a leaf that was right there in the way. And this is all on the video for what we did. It's on the YouTube channel. So please go to the American Vindicta YouTube channel. It'll also be up on the Rumble. If you haven't done it yet, like, share, and subscribe. We need to try and get this this channel to get as many subscriptions as possible, because if I can get paid by YouTube to do this, then I can go out and get more cool videos for you guys. Anyways, so there's a leaf that's right there in the little bitty entrance into this top part of this cave at this point, all right? This entrance that we believe goes 45 degrees down. And this leaf is just vibrating back and forth, and then it would stop, and then it would vibrate again back and forth. And we made a scientific observation that something is sucking wind down and then pushing wind back up. So there could potentially be an opening somewhere in the bottom where water has gotten into, and it could be another entrance to what we're at. With the Great Pyramids, there was three main entrances, I believe, maybe four. So, you know, that's potentially what we're looking at. And the area that we're in, and we don't disclose it because, you know, for security reasons, we don't want anyone going and vandalizing it. We don't want to show up one day and it just be completely filled with rocks. Ha ha ha, Jesuits were here. So, you know, we're very mindful about what we say. So we can talk about the experience and show the experience, but the location, no way. Absolutely not. And that whole area within the valley that we're in, littered with mounds underneath the water. So the Native American tribes, and they'll remain nameless, that were in this area, dominated this area. And there's a bluff shelter cave, 8 minutes worth of a boat ride north of this cave that we're in, that we're excavating, which is a previous excavation site for the team. And we found remains there of civilizations, you know, arrowhead points, tools. The unfortunate thing is that, and you'll see in the video, that the cave actually has started to collapse in. And we think it may be a tomb for people who part of this cave collapsed on top of. Because there was a cache of like 70 points, arrowheads, that were found underneath gigantic boulders. So, which would only mean, you know, this collapsed on top of people. Probably while they were sleeping in a storm. Limestone's everywhere. And a lot of these caves are limestone. So, the reason why these cave-ins happen is you'll have all these cracks. And the roof of the cave will get filled with water, which calcifies. And that helps to spread the stone out and crack the stone more. And that allows more water to penetrate into it. And then you have the expansion and extraction of water depending on the seasons. When it gets very cold in the area that we're at, it's rainy all the time. So, and in fact, there was actually a waterfall on top of it. So, you know, the water will seep into the rocks and it will freeze. It will expand. It will crack the rocks. And then it will begin to melt during the warmer part of the season. And, you know, hundreds of years of this action happening back and forth eventually led to the downfall of whoever was underneath it when it fell in. But that's such a large area. And it felt like a spaceship when you're in there. But that's such a large area that it would take a 100-man crew, minimum 20. Just to properly excavate that area and sift through all the debris so that we don't miss anything. And we don't take anything from these places, by the way. We're looking for the evidence of giants. Okay, we're not looking for the evidence of Native Americans who lived there. We knew they lived there. We're finding their objects that are there. And we're very respectful about what we do. We don't leave our trash. We don't mark on rocks. We're there strictly as observationists to categorize what we find. And also, you know, you got to understand the laws of the states that you're in. If you find human remains, you have to, you know, depending on where you're at, you have to report that to the police. So, you know, once again, I'm not going to say what state we're in, but we will follow every legal and lawful policy that we have to. And, you know, the other thing is we don't want to take stuff home with us because you never know. You never know what kind of, you know, potential hitchhiking spirits that may be there. So getting back to this cave that we're in, we had to go by boat. We had a local guide. His name is Wayne. Wayne is the one who found the bluff shelter cave that the team originally went to. I was supposed to be there that day, but ended up having to go back home. And then I was able to make this one. And it was just me and Mondo this time. Typically, it's me, Mondo, and our friend Brent of Brent Height Outdoors. Make sure you follow him on Facebook. Follow him on YouTube. Awesome guy. He's a modern-day Arkansas explorer. Extremely knowledgeable. And just a great guy to hang out with. And God has put me around such cool guys that really have shown me a different view of life that I think I was desperately looking for and needing, instead of always being surrounded by tension and violence and the life that I lived for the last 15 years, being in the military and law enforcement, was very stressful. And I find that one of the most stress-relieving things I've done so far is crawling into what most people would say would be, suffocatingly tight spaces in caves to find stuff that people sometimes just, you know, can't get over their fears to go and see. And it's dangerous. Caving is dangerous. What we were doing today was dangerous. Or excuse me, 2 days ago, that was dangerous. But this is the risk that you take to explore the hidden truth of history. And, you know, let me talk about the Native Americans for a second. Within the areas that we're in, the mound builders areas, There are tales, stories of giants. There are stories of slant-eyed giants, cannibalistic giants. It seems like every tribe has some sort of an experience with a very violent, large species of hominid. And I'm not talking about, the NBA player guys. You know, me and Timothy Alvarino, we had an argument about this one time. And we were talking about how, there are so many different giant skeletons that were found within America. And he said, my problem is how do we not know it's just that random 7-footer? Because we've had those throughout all of human civilization. We have it in our genes to throw out 7-foot-tall guys. And, I said, you're right, but we won't know until we get our hands on the bones. And, Tim knows this way more than I do. Tim is really the expert. And, he helped shed some light for me on the way archaeologists look at things and the way paleontologists and anthropologists view things. And he's, Tim is a very big part of my life when it comes to learning this stuff. And I'm so grateful that God was able to grant me such a friendship with a man like Timothy Alvarino. And I've learned so much from him about this. And, it's just one of those things where, there's so much that has been explored in America that you kind of start to think that there's not a lot left to explore. Well, you're wrong. Chase the legends and the lore, and you will find something. That's what we've been doing. That's what's put us on this journey so far. And we're finding stuff. It's not giant skulls. It's not all this other crazy stuff, but you eventually have to once you're on the path for so long, going down creeks and rivers and crawling in and out of caves with petroglyphs and, there's an 8-footer over there. Okay, let's go see this cave and then explore everything. Hey, there was a 7-footer over there. Okay, let's go see that cave. Let's go explore everything. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money to do this. Everything that we're doing, we are forking it out of our own income. It's not very much. I do not make the money I used to now. So when we plan these trips, we have to go as hard as possible. And we don't stop. Whenever we were in Arkansas, we were doing the cave explorations where there are the potentials for giant remains. We weren't getting back until 1 in the morning. Waking up at 7, having our meeting by about, eating, and then having our meeting by 9 o'clock and getting out on the road by 9:30. And then after that, we were in caves. Dangerous, hot, cold, very questionable ropes that we're climbing up. It's very adventurous, but man, I don't know how to explain how dangerous it can be. The cave that we were in on this journey, me and Mondo, this is probably the safest one we've been into so far, but the tightest. It's like being in a culvert. A culvert that you drive over that you see that, separates streams and highways. It's about that's about the circumference of it, right? So, you can't move. You can barely swing a pickaxe. You can barely swing a shovel. And why we're doing this, I kind of segued there for a second, but why we're doing this is because the Native American lore have been in contact with beings that, L.A. Mazzulli, he says, we're on the trail for the Nephilim. And L.A. is actually funding what we're doing for this one cave because it has raised some eyebrows, what we found. And I don't mean that hyperbole. I'm not a hype man. You guys should know this by now. I'm more of a complainer and a chew your asser out than I am a hyping things up. And You know, I remain pessimistic until I find like that link of hope that lets me go, okay, we're on the path now. Because I'm just, that's just me. I'm always going to try and explain stuff through scientific method, try and recreate stuff that we've seen, orbs, sounds. You know, if we can recreate it and we can debunk it, then that's better for science. It's better for the people who are interested, because there's way too many people who will go out, and I'm and they're in the Christian movement, and I'm going to be completely blunt when I say this and not use anybody's names, but there are people who trust whatever they're told. They trust whatever video evidence they see, whatever witness testimony they get, and they say, that's gold, that's got to be it, let's run with it. I'm going to jump on such and such show, and I'm going to talk about it for an hour and a half, and I'm going to do a fundraiser, and it'll reach tens of thousands of dollars, and then nothing will happen, and no one will say, well, we screwed up, here's your money back. And a lot of these guys, and hey, I'm not digging on anybody, a lot of these guys that do it, they don't explore outside of the Internet Explorer. And then they stand on such authority, like they know what they're talking about. Everything that they say is true. And don't you dare come against them or you'll get the great rebuke. Screw those people. That's not me. That's not what I do. And if I hit a sensitive spot for anybody that, you know, that sounds like you, if you're listening to me, maybe you should check yourself before you wreck yourself. God will not honor people like that. Now, what we're doing is, I mean, real archaeological work. We had over 200 buckets full of 5-gallon freaking buckets worth. I mean, guys, we moved probably a ton, like a metric ton of material in 8 hours. Just three dudes. Which is funny because, you know, I was telling Mondo, and he's been to Egypt, and I said, Mondo, you know, this reminds me as to why you see that work gang of guys at all these archaeological sites in the Middle East, and they're moving, you know, 100 buckets at a time, and there's 40 or 50 guys in a line, because that's really the only economic way to do it. Because if not, man, I mean, when we took a break after we broke our shovel, our first shovel, 4 hours into it, we took a break and we went into town to get lunch and, you know, get some more tools. My whole right wrist started to just swell from inflammation. Now, I broke this wrist when I was in Iraq, and it's just never really healed right. And maybe that's stupid me for never seeking the proper medical attention later, but it gives me fits all the time. I can't bear crawl because of my wrist if I do have to walk on my freaking knuckles. So, and I don't have half the flexion of my right wrist as I do my left. And so, you know, I just pushed through it and I was like, ah, you know what, I'll take some ibuprofen later. But man, my whole wrist seized up and, you know, I was really worried that I wouldn't be able to do much else. And I was sitting there praying. I was like, God, please release this tension on my wrist or otherwise I'm going to be a 300-pound useless gorilla hauling freaking buckets back and forth. Which, hey, man, if that's what I had to do, that's what I have to do. But, you know, we ate, drank a lot of water, inflammation went down, went back to the hole, and we dug for another 4 hours. And we dug 2 feet down. We found this floor, and it looked like poured concrete. It was so strange. And we dug as far as we could. And it seemed like the further we got to the opening of this hole, where this chamber goes to open up at, where all the cool air is coming out of, the debris got thicker. The rock and the sediment mixture got thicker. Oh, by the way, as we were digging, we did find a flint knife. We did find copious remains, deposits of charcoal. Now, charcoal doesn't spontaneously, you know, wood doesn't spontaneously combust in a wet cave. So we know that somebody at some point in time, either during the Civil War or prior, somewhere prior to us being in there a long time ago, because this stuff was a foot underneath mud. I mean, a foot underneath mud and hundreds of pounds of rock. Somebody was in there making a fire. Now, with the Native American cultures, one of the things that they seem to do is they, with mounds or burials, burial mounds, tombs, they would lay different layers of debris, sediment, charcoal, rock, dirt, and then back and forth. And so every place that we've been to so far that we've excavated, we excavated, I think, five different places in Arkansas so far. And now this area that we're at that's remaining anonymous. We have found charcoal everywhere. There has been burial mounds. So that's really when we knew, okay, we are on to something now. That means that there is human activity here. You know, not just the fact that we found one flint knife. That could have been, you know, brought in by somebody when they filled up the man-made lake. It could have came off the bedrock in the ground and found its way in there. But charcoal is not going to find its way a foot and a half underneath mud. So I want to talk to you about something, though. We're going to go to a break, and then we're going to talk about the Great Pyramid of Giza and go over some of the fantastical things that people say about it, because it relates to what we're doing now. And as Mondo says, that actually the entrance of this cave matches up with, I believe, the summer solstice. So we know we're not in just a random cave. We know we're not just in like some random place that looks cool, looks mysterious, and oh, hey, happens to have some stuff in here. Anytime you have a astrological lining up of any type of burial tomb, that is significant. And I can't emphasize the significance of it. Every megalithic site in the world has an astrological projection somewhere that leads to a winter solstice, a summer solstice, Orion's belt. You know, it always has something to do with that. So we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to get into it.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing, and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly, at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
All right, welcome back to American Vindicta. So, before we get back into today's topic, I am teaching an active shooter class. I need to be broadcasting this message more. So far, I don't think we even have half the class full yet. So, you know, we have plenty of seats available for people. The active shooter awareness and reaction course, I designed it to train the average civilian into the history and knowledge of active shooters, and then the types of things that we see, especially in law enforcement, of the occurrence of active shooters. And then the other parts of that are going to be the reactionary portion. And the reactionary portion involves simulation training with airsoft guns. I have all the guns. I have the holsters for the guns. I got a long rifle for one of them. I got the mask. So the only thing you'll have to bring is a little bit of protection because the pellets hurt. And we are going to be doing tactical training, so room clearing, actual simulation training. We're going to be doing scenario-based training where I'm going to be putting you through the series of uses of force like what I would teach police officers. And so you're going to know shoot, don't shoot situations. You're going to know how to use your verbal judo. You're going to know how to de-escalate a situation if the need arises. And, you know, I'm going to be teaching you the things that you need to consider when you pull a pistol out or a rifle and you're in public. There are some things here that will save your life, either from not getting shot by an undercover cop or an off-duty cop or by another civilian, or to save your life civilly. Because everything you do now is being monitored, you're being recorded, and it will be used against you like Kyle Rittenhouse saw. Could be out there doing the right thing, and they'll still come against you. So we're going to be teaching people about that. There's going to be some really cool gunfighting courses where you know, you and another student or possibly yourself against me, and we're going to get into a little bit of a simulated shooting. And this is really geared for church security, the average, you know, mom and dad who want to protect their child. Think of it also for people who come into your home. You have a home invasion. You know, trust me, you aren't going to go at them with a tennis racket, guys. You're going to grab the gun that you have. So train for it. And I'm going to show you everything that I use. I'm going to have all my gear there. So if you want to get hands-on what, you know, law enforcement carried, from the radio communication, the lights, the rifle setup, the pistol setup, the battle belt setup, the medical stuff that we use. Oh, also we're going to have Jamie Walden there as a guest instructor. Jamie is going to be teaching you his tactics from the Marine Corps Infantry, just like my Marine Corps Infantry. So we're going to be giving you that sort of a training class. We're also both former cops, so you're going to get that level of training as well. I had a medical background. Jamie Walden was an EMT, so you're going to get a lot of medicine, a lot of tactical medicine. And then we also are going to have a Special Forces 18 Delta medic who's going to be there teaching you more of the tactical medicine. Guys, you're not going to find this amount of professionals in a three-day course cheaper than what we're doing. You're just not going to find it. It's $650. That'll give you 3 days of training. $50 of it goes to Bob Griswold at Ready Made Resources, which is where this is going to be hosted at. If you want that information, go to readymaderesources.com. At the top of the page, there will be a training site. Click on that. It'll bring you to the active shooter awareness training. Just scroll down. You'll see where you can sign up. It'll have a sign up button on there. And come and train with us. It's going to be a great time to hang out and fellowship. After you know, every day we're going to have an after action where we're going to sit down and just answer questions about gear, about tactics, about law enforcement, about politics, you know, prepping, whatever you guys think. We will sit there and we are going to talk to you. I want to separate myself and what I'm doing from a lot of other professionals who train civilians. And I want to give you as close to law enforcement-based training as possible. You know, we're given this training, and we survived these shootings. And to me, it's heartbreaking that we don't then extend the same type of training to the civilian population. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, I'm not going to be teaching you sensitive law enforcement tactics and all that other stuff, or military stuff. This is, you know, what I'm going to be teaching you is open source training. You know, it's anybody can go to YouTube and see how to clear a room, but you're never going to be able to hear the way we do things, the way what we're looking at, our different approaches into a room, soft hit, a hard hit, an investigatory hit. You know, how to slice the pie, how to dominate a room. You know, how to dominate a hallway, how to communicate. We're going to have a lot of shoot, move, and communicates. I'm actually going to be replicating one or two scenarios that have recently happened for active shooters, and I'm going to be putting people through it, letting you see not only this is what law enforcement deals with, and this is how we see things, but as a civilian, if you beat law enforcement to the punch, this is potentially what you're going to have to see. So we're going to be putting you through a lot of scenarios that is just not out there. You know, no dig on anybody out there who's a professional gunfighter instructor. You know, I'm not doing a flat range to teach you proper shooting techniques. I'm teaching you how to actually use your skills for the actual shooting. Go to those guys. Shoot better. Learn your basic fundamentals of marksmanship. All right? They're worth the money to go to. But for what we're doing, this is going to be, okay, if I'm not at a flat range learning how to shoot a one MOA you know, group, if I need to learn to move my feet, go around a corner, and look at things a different way with a gun in my hand, this is your course. All right, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a very professionally ran course. I'm putting my whole heart and soul into this. So, you know, I really have that pull that God has put me here to train people who don't have the training to prepare you for the day when you're going to need it. I have the training. It doesn't do me any good to not share it. So that's my spiel for that. Next, we have the our other sponsor, Jeff, mountain-state-survival.com. Get your food now while you can. If you have not seen lately, they are continuously talking about how the economy is going to collapse. We're in a recession. Congratulations. Digital currency is coming. Most likely, from what I was told by a bank, is that it will happen starting around February. So, that means there's going to be a lot of craziness. Potential riots. A lot of turbulence in the streets. People fighting over items in stores again. Who knows? Be prepared. Get what you need now. Jeff's website carries most of what you need for your average prepping, for your camping. I strongly suggest that people think of the terms of bugging out and bugging in. So, and Jeff is one of the, along with Bob, they're both my longest running sponsors, good men of God. So please help support their business, and supporting them helps to support me. All right, let's move on to the real tale of the tape. Let's talk about the craziness that is in the Great Pyramid of Giza. Now, there's a lot of rumors, a lot of speculations of what this, you know, could potentially be. I believe that it's just a tomb. It could be more than that. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows. But it is a very significant tomb that has a lot of very strange, let's say, conspiracies wrapped around it. Now, the material that I'm getting from right now comes from talesoftimesforgotten.com. Cool little website. Really good points. I found it so good, I actually wanted to go over it with you today. So, one can gather a general impression of what most members of the general public believe about the pyramids by looking at the wide array of fantastical answers to the questions of what was the purpose of the Egyptian pyramids? The vast majority of answers to this question come straight out of science fiction, and I completely agree. So here are a few of the highlights. Claims that the pyramids were built as a sort of a particle accelerator for energy. Claims that they were definitely either aliens or super technically superior human ancestors involved in building it and the construction of the pyramids, and that they were built as devices to measure a planet's core. We have claims that the pyramids were built as a mechanical device to slow down time in order to increase the pharaoh's lifespan. There are claims that the pyramids were built as the first computers to showcase the Egyptians' mathematical and universal knowledge, and that they could only have been built either by means of alien technology, by means of sound waves that repelled the gravity and levitated the stones into place, or with concrete. There are claims that the Great Pyramid is the grand summoning up of thousands of years of humanity's experiences and gained knowledge, and that the Egyptians' Bible in the stone. There are claims that the pyramids are giant combustion cannons that were built to initiate flight. There are claims that we cannot possibly know why the pyramids were built, but they may have been a way to generate power. There are claims that the pyramids were most likely built as energy containers, and claims that the pyramids were a electromagnetic, quantum, solar, hydroelectric power plant, a planetarium, an astronomical observatory built by aliens to pay homage to their home stars, which they came to Earth from. And there are also claims that the Great Pyramids were a spaceport, or even a spacecraft. The list goes on. Most, if not every single one of these speculations are false, fantastical. I know guys within this industry. Some of you have listened to them talk. Some of you have seen their lectures, books they may have produced. And I'm not going to say all, but most of it is bullshit. Most of it are people who are speculating things that they can't prove through fantastical imagery, fantastical imagination. And because they've been around the block for a while and they got a cult-like following, if you say anything against them, well, you're just, you know, you're just working against me, and that's just the workings of the devil. And then if you dare come against them, oh, look, I'm right. I am correct, because so-and-so is coming against me. And if he's saying it, it's got to be from the devil. Or it could be that a new kid on the block who is not easily fooled doesn't believe three-quarters of the BS that's put out there by Christian researchers, by non-Christian researchers. I'm not name-dropping anybody. I'm not pointing fingers. You know who you are. Now, there are guys within this field who do the research. They go out to the places. You know, they pay the money for guys to go out and explore. So I'm not talking about those guys. And you know, in respect of both parties, I'll leave all names out of it. However, a lot of this, especially, and there are TV shows out there that's on the History Channel. I'm not going to say anything else. That is just fantastical bullshit. It's beyond scientific theory. It's theoretical junk. It's deception. It may not be purposely deceptive, but figuratively, it is very manipulative. How people will say, well, you know, based off of this guy's theory and that guy's book and this dude's, you know, article in a magazine and the way we turned over this rock and shined it and the face of Jesus showed up in my pea soup. You know, they start to add all this fantastical stuff together. And it's like madmen collaborating with idiots, collaborating with people who just want fame. And with fame and fantastical tales comes a lot of you who are listening who, you know, innocently will give your money to a lot of these guys and then nothing comes of it. Nothing. It's the same garbage that we've heard from George Norrie's show. You know, and I'm not digging on George Norrie. I forgot the name of the show. But, you know, we've heard a lot of the same garbage from a lot of people over the years who will talk about, oh, yeah, you know, I talk with these aliens 5 billion light years away. And you know, we come on, guys, we're smarter than this. As Christians, we're smarter than this. If you give in to that fantastical tale, you know, I'm not going to say anything negative. I could be completely wrong and be viewed as a jackass, but I hope I'm proved wrong. But until then, I spent 10 years worth of talking to absolutely crazy people in law enforcement. And if you're law enforcement or prior law enforcement, EMT, first responder, a nurse, a doctor, you know where I'm going with this. There are people out there who just make up stuff, and some of them are good at it. Some of them are really good at it. There's a guy from Mexico, Jaime. I can't remember his last name. He's brought out 3 or 4 different hoaxes that's fooled the world 3 or 4 different times. And every time the guy gets hundreds of thousands of dollars for it. And then, oh, hey, can't believe it's a fake again. So be careful with what you watch. Use discernment. Understand a lot of these things that people are doing are for entertainment purposes and to get fame and quick money and to open up the purse of the little old retired lady and say, well, if you can just give me a love offering of this, it'll help my team to go and find this. I'm not going to tell you what to donate. I'm not going to tell you not to donate. Just be careful, all right? 99% of these guys that I'm talking about do not have my background, do not have my credibility within the professional environment of working in the government, but will claim that they know 10 times more about what I know through speculation, though I spent 15 years in the government. I know a little bit about conspiracies. I know a little bit about certain things here and there. I know that 95% of the conspiracies that people have made millions of dollars off of are complete, lacking in depth, false. We do have a lot of stuff that we don't talk about. A lot of stuff I won't talk about, mainly because I don't want to visit at 3 in the morning. However, some of this stuff goes beyond classified state secrets like war, sensitive law enforcement cases, which, you know, to a lot of people can be innocuous and harmless to the extent that we're covering up stuff, guys. Foot stomp on the ground 3 times. And with that, I'm talking about like stuff like Operation Paperclip, right? But, you know, one of the best people who've come out to help shine a light on real government conspiracies is a guy named Bob Lazar. And I'm going to get into Bob Lazar one day. I'm not right now. But there's not that many Bob Lazars out there. And just, hey, look at some of the stuff that Bob has gone through. They've tried killing that guy a couple times. Tried ruining his business. You don't want to come out as a whistleblower and be worldwide famous because your life is over. Your credibility's done with. You know, so you got to be careful what you say. Like in law enforcement. If I went to all my buddies, you know, we went out to lunch. I said, "Oh, guys, you'll never admit. You'll never believe what I'm about to admit to you. A spaceship landed out in the middle of the road, and two aliens walked out and talked to me, and then told me to have a good day." I do know a guy when I was stationed in the Northeast. He's an older guy who told us a very similar story. And you know what happened? Completely discredited, put on the loony list, lost most of his friends, lost face with everybody. Even if that event actually happened, that's the way it's looked upon. So you don't come out and talk about the stuff that I talk about unless you know what you're talking about. And once again, I stay within my narrow scope, all right? 15 years in the government, military, law enforcement, prepping, surviving, shooting. I stay there. All right, I expand out into the nether realm, but I have guys that I touch on: L.A. Marzulli, Mondo Gonzalez, a Steve Quayle, a Timothy Alberino, you know, a Dave Hodges, guys who have been in the field of research and talked to groups of people and organizations and individuals that have the bona fides out there, that have the government, you know, creds. So if I want to lean on those people, I'll lean on those people, right? But there are people out there, like on a certain show in History Channel, that talk about aliens all the time. And, you know, you sit there and you watch this garbage, and I go, what in the hell? Where are you guys getting this from? Aliens landed on the pyramid. And then, you know, tentacles came out and they sucked the power out of it. And I'm just like, you know what? My child could make up the same thing. All right. So just be careful with what you hear. All right, let's get into this real quick. I'm losing my mind over here. People make me so frustrated. There are a few correct answers to the questions that we talked about earlier. You know, what is the purpose of a pyramid? You know, computer, power, weapon, spacecraft, spaceport, teleportation, slows down time, measuring device for the, you know, the core, the center of the earth. Nobody can prove any of that, by the way. Nobody at all can prove it. If they could, we wouldn't be talking about it right now. People would be floating on the pyramids. I'm just saying, they can't. We've only recently, as a civilization, gotten into the pyramids. There are tens of thousands of things like the Great Pyramids that we haven't even uncovered yet. Teotihuacan was just a giant mound of dirt until it was uncovered. And then, as you're looking at a step pyramid, you're going, well, that's strange. That's not supposed to be there. Well, guess what, guys? Littered across America are step pyramids that look like giant mounds as you drive by them. If only we had the access to them. And our team, you know, if we had an excavator with us everywhere we went, that'd be great. You know, if we had the ability to get people's permission, hey, can we go on your land and do a couple pilot holes, excuse me, to see if this is just dirt or if there is a stone foundation underneath it. And if so, oh my Lord. But we don't have the equipment 9 times out of 10. We're running all this off of our own little, you know, sorry paychecks. And then you don't get the permission from people half the time. Sometimes you do, and that's great. I don't know, like if I had a gigantic hill in my backyard talking to you people in Arkansas, and somebody said, hello, my name is such and such. We're on this archaeological team. We think this may be such and such, you know, historical whatever. Could we go and explore it, please? Watch us if you want. Most people go, nah, I'm good. I've been there since my granddaddy used to be here. Well, cool, man. Did you know, like, a mile down the road, we excavated one of these places and we were pulling giant's bones out of them? Okay, thanks. That's our offer. And people tell you no. So, you know, that's the hard part about this. It takes a tremendous amount of effort. You would think people would be more involved in this, but, you know, it is what it is. The pyramids. Why were the pyramids built? I want to do my best to debunk most of this. We don't have the time to. But let's talk about this. Were the pyramids used for generating electricity? Well, the most popular idea among members of the general public is that the pyramids were used as some sort of a generation station for power. The idea has been promoted by, you know, numerous episodes of the History Channel's popular series that talks about aliens. And many scholars look at that History Channel series and the people who come on it, and I'm talking about lettered geologists, archaeologists, anthropologists, paleontologists, and they go, those guys are crazy. They're making nine times out of ten, they're making this stuff up. Look at them. Most of them are fat, and they explore on the computer, and they couldn't even get out into the field and do real exploration. But yet they're brought out like if they are the authority of exploration. And it's just ridiculous. They're show ponies. They're not the thoroughbreds in the race. So, no one knows. I'll just say it like that. No one knows. Could the pyramids be used as energy generating stations? Maybe. I haven't been convinced of it yet. Nobody has. It's just speculation. Supposedly, the Great Pyramid can be filled with water, and then the water causes a valve to slam shut, which sends a sound wave throughout the pyramid into the king's chamber, and that's the Great Pyramid. And according to these people, the sound waves would cause the granite walls of the king's chamber to emit electrons, thereby creating electromagnetic energy. And it would then produce microwave signals that would punch out into space and touch an alien satellite. And then everybody will know, what, dinner's ready? And that it's the equivalent of a SETI, a search for extraterrestrial life and intelligence. It's bullshit. It's not real. It's not factual. It's speculation. And you can find hundreds and hundreds of websites filled full of speculation. And I guess what is it entertaining? Absolutely. Do I watch it for the entertainment purposes? Sure. You know, there's nothing else on. Hey, let's put it on this show. At least I know I can be entertained. You know, the ancient astronaut theories. They're all theory. They can't prove any of it. But what it does is it ruins this search and exploration of the biblical narrative. Because it's always about the aliens. It's always about some hyper-dimensional phantasm that walks in between the pages of history and reality. You can't prove it. But yet, when we go back into the Bible, we know that there were giants in those days and after. And we know that here in America, that everything possible that could be done to hide, for whatever reason, the fact that there were giants has been done. The Native American culture, the Native American community, is greatly affected by this. All the people who were pushed off their lands, all the people whose their ancient sites, their cultural historical sites, have all been leveled. For farming, for industrial farming, or for suburbs, housing, malls. And there's such a wealth of history that's been destroyed. And then you have, certain organizations who will make things disappear. We all know of the rumors of the Smithsonian being part of the Vatican playbook, and how the Vatican has done everything possible through the Spanish Inquisitions, the conquistadors going through Peru, destroying anything that had to do with ancestral worship or the worship of these bones of giants or the giants themselves and all the story and the lore. You can't kill the people's storytelling unless you kill out all the people. And unfortunately, here in America, the atrocities that have happened to the Native Americans have, greatly affected their psyche, greatly affected their outlook on the white man, on the American civilization that they live in. Rightly so, whatever. But whenever we find something like an elongated skull, and we try to verify the information. Oh, well, if you're going to verify it, you got to go to these tribes. Okay. How do we contact the tribes? Nobody knows. Is there a headquarters for the tribes? Nobody knows. Is there a website? Yeah, you can go to this website. You call a number, no one picks up. So that's frustrating. And then, 9 times out of 10, when you do talk to an elder or you do talk to a council, they want money. Oh, you want to be able to prove that there were a race of people here that were cannibalistic giants with elongated skulls and slanted eyes and 6 fingers, 6 toes, double sets of teeth, and red hair, sounding a lot like a connection of people that went to South America that came from the Middle East? Yeah, that'll be such and such thousands of dollars. And what's frustrating is, we go, why? Why do you want to cover up your own history? Wouldn't you want the satisfaction of your history being proven correct? Wouldn't you want that? That's what I would want. I would want my history being proven correct and prove that these guys over here within the government have been hiding it and suppressing it. A little bit of vengeance. That's a good way to get it. To prove the narrative. And, even if they're not Christian, hey man, it still proves your cultural heritage, doesn't it? So that's part of the battle with this. That's part of the problems that we have ran into so far. It does get incredibly frustrating. Look at how much gas costs, guys. We're having to drive hundreds of miles in many different directions to go and chase down leads. That's a lot of money. And the maintenance on the cars, the per diem, the meals, the hotels, it's a tremendous amount of money. And, it's not that we don't want to do it. It's not that it's not, that we're not funding it. We are. We fund it ourselves. But what's frustrating is you spend all that time doing this and then just to hit roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. So, when we find a place like what me and Mondo Gonzalez just found, and we put all this work into it, we're not done. We're honestly, depending on the way this could go, we may only be a quarter of the way there. We see this chance of not having any outside contested agencies from either the Native Americans or the government or a private landowner, so on and so forth. And we go, you know what? We're going to dig into this until we find something or we find nothing. You know, it takes endurance and tenacity. It really does. And I have a whole new perspective and line of respect for archaeologists, paleontologists. So, you know, kudos to these guys. As Indiana Jones would say, you know, the real exploration, the discovery, the travels, the adventures, you're not going to find it in the library. You know, and for a lot of you so-called researchers out there, you're not going to find it on the internet. Get out and get your hands dirty. You know, film it. Make it entertaining. I'll watch it. Anybody would watch it. You know, I'm not even any good at this. And people are, you know, really, really liking it. And it's because we're tired of being lied to by the governments, because we're tired of COVID. We're tired of the lockdowns. We're tired of, you know, BLM burning streets down and everything being about race or sex or transgenderism. People want to be entertained, but, you know, people want to have that adventure side of it. And a lot of people can't do it. So, you know, God's grace, we can do it. We can show you. You know, that's why I like doing this now. So if you want to, you know, help us out, let us know. AmericanVindictusShow@gmail.com. You can also go on to www.AmericanVindictusShow.com and you can donate. If you do send a donation, just put it in there. Hey, for archaeological dig, and that's where it will go to. If you want to donate to the show, help me keep going on. I appreciate it. I appreciate anything that I get. There's a lot of stuff going on with China right now. Nancy Pelosi's over there stirring the hornet's nest. She's on her way back now. Be a real shame if her plane got knocked out of the sky. Times are getting turbulent. Joe Biden's crazy. You know, so many things I want to say that would get me kicked off the air. Train, prep, pray. Keep your patience. Remember, saints, this is a time of endurance. Get your endurance from the Lord. Don't forget that the Lord is the one who brings us our joy, our fun. Enjoy it. Be mighty and bold in your faith. Comfort one another. Don't be afraid to tell somebody, you know, you're having a bad day and that you just need to, you know, you need to tell them about it so that you don't explode on somebody. And honestly, you know, get down on your knees and start praying. It just feels like it's too quiet. Feels like something's coming. I hope not. You know, honestly, I hope the only thing that's coming is that we find this a damn 8.5 foot tall skeleton in the middle of a cave. But, you know, most likely I'll be wrong there and World War III will start in the next 2 months. We'll see. Train, prep, pray. Situational awareness. Don't get complacent. Don't get lazy. Break that gun down tonight. Wipe it down. Clean it out. Get some fresh lube back on it. Stretch the body out. You never know when you may need to run. Stay frosty. The enemy's out there. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.